Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, where each time out we listen to stories from our greatest generation. We want to make sure that our veterans know we honor and appreciate their service and sacrifice, that we want to preserve their stories so they're not forgotten, so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, I think you'll agree by the end of this hour, we're going to be educated and maybe even inspired by some of the things we'll hear about today from 87-year-old Vernon Conrad of Reedley, California. Served in the 25th Infantry Division during World War II. If you're from the Fresno area, maybe you remember the three terms he spent on the Fresno County Board of Supervisors. But that never would have happened if he didn't make it home from the Pacific during World War II. Let's go back to those days. Now, you can paint a good picture because when I ask veterans, well, what was it like back then in their hometown? For you, it was, what was it like on this property? Because these 40 acres of fruit orchards we're sitting in right now is right where you were born, I understand.
That's right. There have been a lot of changes made, that's for sure. But it's a great place to live, and I wouldn't want to live anyplace else. And my wife and I have redone things. In fact, we built this house that we're in, laid a lot of the bricks myself. So there's some feelings that go with, you know, where you are, and enjoyed Reedley. And of course, it was only a little over 3,000 population back then. And I really like that better than they do now.
There are a lot of people out there echoing what you just said, I'm sure, as they listen. And I have to imagine, just looking at all the peach trees as I drove in, I imagine you've picked a lot of peaches off some of those trees. How old do you think you were when you got sent out there to start picking?
Golly, I don't know how old really, but I know I picked in crews time I was a junior in high school. I've picked peaches and picked grapes and plums and nectarines, and I've done all of this kind of farm work before it was fashionable to be a farm worker. That was the way we survived. We didn't hire a lot of labor then. We pretty well did our own, and with a little help. But now it's somewhat different, where owners and operators don't do too much of their own labor. But things do change, you know.
Absolutely. What can you tell me about the atmosphere here in Reedley in December of 1941? So you would have been 15 years old. You're a high school student at the time. Do you remember how you found out that the Japanese had attacked Pearl Harbor?
I don't remember. It happened on a Sunday, and we had a radio, but we never turned it on very much. When I really felt the impact of it was on the bus going to school Monday morning. That's when I really realized that something really terrific had happened. And then when we got to school, we had an assembly. The principal of the high school got all the students together and informed us of what had happened. And undoubtedly, there would be a whole lot of changes made rather quickly, and they were. We all the rest of the time when I was in high school, we had no night games or anything. They were all in the daytime because we were in blackout conditions here in the valley. They weren't supposed to have lights at night. Some thought that their Japanese might continue to the coast and attack here.
Well, and I've talked to some folks who are in some of the towns around here during that time, and they remember having Japanese-American classmates, and then all of a sudden those classmates were gone a few months later. Is that what happened here in Reedley?
That's correct. All of the Japanese were required to pack up in very short time, and were shipped most all out of California. And we had a lot of my friends who were classmates in school. They were soon gone. So tremendous upheaval. Whether it was good or bad, or whether it was necessary, I don't know. But it happened. That's just part of the things that happened because of war.
And just trying to put myself in your shoes, and, you know, having these classmates pulled out of school and sent somewhere else, and realizing that if their parents were farming some property, they didn't have that anymore, and here they just are gone all of a sudden. That had to create a fairly emotional environment around here, I'd guess.
Oh, it sure did. in our case, I had an older brother who was 7 years older than I was. It was in the first draft where they were going to be taken and trained for a year and then come home. The final deal on that was that he came home 4.5 years later. He spent a lot of time in Europe. But he did come home, and that's the bottom line on anything, is you go, you do whatever you have to do, and try to keep your head down so you can come home.
Well, really, then, for the first couple years of America's involvement in the war, you had your brother to worry about, and I imagine you thought of him often. Did you guys hear from him very often?
Well, we heard from him some, but he wasn't a real good letter writer. He was in the tank outfit, light tanks. They were sent to Iceland. Kind of a funny place for tanks, but they were to occupy that area so that the Germans couldn't use it to refuel and refurbish their U-boats. The D-Day, he was in England then. I think it was the third day after D-Day their unit was deployed. He was in a recon unit. Light tanks weren't much of a match for the German 88s, so they would send out to find German units and then get away from there because they didn't stay around very long or they'd be blown up. He did come home on a furlough when I was home on a delay en route to ship out, so I did get to see him just before I went overseas.
Well, and I imagine as you're finishing up high school and he's already in the service and this war is raging, it's probably occurring to you that you're going to have no choice but to do something?
I knew that just as soon as I was 18, I was going to go. That was just the way things were at that time. The particular time when I entered the service, we had been taking quite a bit of casualties in the infantry. So when I went in, everybody that went in that unit went to infantry replacement training, and we were supposed to have 17 weeks of training. Some of the fellows that were ahead of me, maybe 6 months older than I was, didn't get 17 weeks. In fact, I didn't get 17 weeks. One of the fellows was on your program here a few months ago. I think he only had 5 weeks when they were shipped.
So you aren't complaining?
No, I'm not complaining. And we took it seriously because our training officers were quite upfront with us to say, what you guys are learning here, you're going to put to practice. You're either going to, you know, war is the idea is to get them before they get you. You take it very seriously, and because I didn't want them to get me.
Yeah, I'm glad they didn't. And I know a few other people are too. And speaking of, before you entered the service, here you are, 18 years old, still here in Reedley. People say you shouldn't get married as a teenager, but 68 years later, I think you have a pretty good success story here. Tell me about how you two met.
Well, I was judging a speech contest, Southmore's, I believe it was. I was a senior, and this young lady really impressed me with just being who she was and the way she acted and everything. I decided that I ought to get really acquainted with her. Well, to begin with, I asked her for a date, and she turned me down. Then I asked her for later another date, and she turned me down. She said she had a good excuse. She just had some teeth pulled or something, but I'm not sure. Maybe she was just playing hard to get or was looking for something better. But then we started dating. I never dated another girl, and she never dated another boy until we were married, and that was about 68 years ago.
Well, and you had some work to do, though, in order to make it back, and you had to trust she was still going to be around. So before you left, and you entered the service in December of 44, just 18 and a half years old, before you went off to training and everything, did you ask Marjorie to wait around for you, or how'd you handle that?
Oh, she asked me. She's not here, so I can say that. No, I never had any other thoughts, but she was the girl I wanted to marry, and I guess she had the similar thoughts about me, because when I was on a delay en route, we had 10 days come home from Camp Roberts and was to report back to be shipped out. we decided to get married. The picture of our wedding is right over there.
And I have that photo along with many others on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. If you haven't liked the show on Facebook yet, just search for Hometown Heroes Radio. You know, and you mentioned Camp Roberts. We might have some folks listening to us at Camp Roberts right now, and maybe they're saying, yeah, I've spent some time there. That wasn't easy. For you, being a farm boy and someone who grew up having to do a lot of work around the property here, did you find basic training to be less of a challenge, you think, than some of the other guys, or was it tough for you too?
It was tough, but it was certainly less of a challenge for some of us farm boys than some of the more city dudes, because they hadn't had to do any physical labor. Farm work at that point in time was all physical labor. We had to pick peaches. They were picked in boxes. You loaded the boxes on a vineyard truck, took them out to the end of the row, and put them on another truck to go to packing house. So it was all hand work. And now it's we've got forklifts and things that we don't have to do all of the heavy handwork that we used to have to. But it taxed you. Basic training was meant to tax you, to strengthen you. And the main thing, I think, was to train you that when somebody said to do something, you did it. You never asked questions. You just did it. And that's necessary in the military. I didn't like the Army, but I made up my mind I'd be the best soldier I could possibly be. I don't know whether I made it or not, but I was fortunate enough to gain rank pretty quick, so I guess it was something to do with my activities.
I hear a lot of stories, and you've heard them too, if you listen to the program, about the people that guys served with and the connections that were formed. Here are these teenagers putting their lives on the line in this global conflict, but I find a lot of cases where someone made a friend and kept that friend for a long time, and it sounds like that was the case in your experience.
I was inducted up at Camp Beale, then shipped by rail back to Camp Roberts. Well, it was about 10 o'clock at night we got into Camp Roberts and herded into a barracks, and lights were out, but we found bunks, and naturally the guys there were interested in who was in the bed next to them and so forth. We're talking, and a fellow asked me, and he was in the bed next to me, said, where are you from? And I said, well, I'm from California, over in the San Joaquin Valley near Fresno. And a voice came from across the room, said, well, I'm from Hanford. So the next morning, naturally, we were trying to figure out who was from Reedley and who was from Hanford. And we made that connection, and it turned out to be the best friend that a man could ever have. I served with Harry Dooley, and we went through some things that weren't so nice together. And then after we came home, we continued the relationship, and we used to go deer hunting stuff every year. I would say that Harry Dooley was the best friend that I had.
You had friends, and you had enemies, and the enemy was a very real and ever-present threat once you got over to the Philippines. Do you remember what it felt like to head overseas, say goodbye to a teenage bride, to your family, to this hometown that you enjoyed so much? Can you put us in your mind at that point? Tell us what you were thinking, what you were feeling?
Well, it was kind of hollow. We shipped out your knowledge that we weren't going to a picnic. We were going to something that was severe, and a lot of men had already been knocked down. Now, I was on a boat, a troop ship, for 23 or 24 days. Never saw land at any one of those days until, well, I guess the second day before we got to where we were going. We did come off Palau Island, and about a mile, I guess, off the island, and I was looking at, there's land in this water. I noticed there were some little black puffs over in the air. And you looked at it a little closer, and the Japanese were bombing Palau, and we were about a mile offshore, 4,500 men on a troop ship. That evening on Tokyo Rose, which they always had it on the radio, and Tokyo Rose said the USS Harry Taylor was sunk off Palau today with 4,500 men aboard. So evidently they knew we were there, but they didn't come after us.
Well, and, you know, I've had a lot of veterans share some of those Tokyo Rose propaganda stories with me. And a lot of times they didn't know whether or not it was true or false. I mean, they hoped and assumed that it was just a lie. But I guess in your case, you knew that wasn't true because you were still standing on the ship, huh?
Yeah, we were still floating. We were on a good ship. It was the USS Harry Taylor. Was a built for the troop ship. It had two 5-inch guns, one fore and aft, and it had a whole slew of 20-millimeter anti-aircraft and 40-millimeter. They put forth a lot of firepower, so if the Japanese had come over, we would have tried to make them as unwelcome as possible.
And I know there were plenty of times on the island of Luzon in the Philippines where the Japanese made you feel quite unwelcome. Break time. Vernon Conrad of Reedley, California, our guest today. We'll hear about his close calls in World War II when Hometown Heroes continues after this. If you are a World War II veteran and you have not been to the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., Honor Flight wants to take you there free of charge. The sooner you submit an application, the sooner Honor Flight can get you to your memorial. In Kern County or the Central Coast, call Lily Marsh at 661-544-VETS. That's 661-544-VETS. Or go to honorflightkerncounty.org. For Fresno, Madera, Merced, Mariposa, Kings, or Tulare counties, check out CV Honor Flight, CV as in Central Valley, cvhonorflight.org, or call Al Perry at 559-970-9853. That's 559-970-9853. Maybe you're the son or daughter of a veteran and you'd like to go along as a guardian. There are applications for that too, and there are other ways you can help. Donations to Honor Flight are tax deductible. We all owe our freedom and liberty to the men and women who put their lives on the line for it. Let's all come together now behind Honor Flight and give our veterans one more tour with honor.